We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the show. We are getting together to do a last pre-draft podcast, unless something weird happens right before the draft. In which case we'll have another podcast, you know, say if they trade the pick right before the draft. Stranger things have happened with this team. So I have brought on two guests, Nick Llewellyn and Graham McQueen, to talk one last time about this draft. This is happily after a tremendously, I guess I would call it unpleasant season. We're back to where we can start feeling some hope. The draft is always fun. Start paying attention. I've been poring over draft sites and getting to know the players that I might see on my team, and I'm kind of starting to fall in love with some and being terrified of others. I'm sure you guys are feeling the same. So how are you guys doing?
Doing pretty well. Excited to talk about the draft. And we have to mention him, I think, the guy who might be making some decisions, Danny Ferry. The new addition to the front office. I'm sure we're all very excited about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we got to talk about Danny a bit. But before I weigh in with my thoughts on the whole Danny Ferry acquisition, which I think is really funny because I've seen more excitement about them bringing in Danny Ferry to the front office than pretty much anything in the last year I've seen about the Pelicans. So just really quick. What is your take, Graham, on Danny Ferry? Good, bad, indifferent?
Like, good.
When you heard the news?
Two thumbs up.
Two thumbs up?
Two thumbs
up. How about you, Nick?
I was pretty excited, and the only thing I'll say beyond two thumbs up is I think it was a great move from just a PR standpoint from the franchise, something that they don't really get a lot of credit for. When everyone's feeling really down and angry about the team, and some people are shocked that Dell Demps is still here, that he hasn't given some type of really meaningful press conference. I don't know if there was a better decision they could have made to bring in a guy who has a lot of credibility and a really strong track record, and not replacing Dell Demps, but just giving him another guy at the seat who has a lot of credibility around the league, I thought was just a brilliant move that really, if you got on Twitter afterwards, nobody felt like they could complain about it. And if you've been on Pelicans Twitter before, you know that that's really rare. For the last year. So I was just really stunned by I don't know, sort of the just PR acumen the team showed with that move. I thought it was great.
So here's the one thing, though, I can't get away from. Is there any possibility that this is a Jerry Colangelo kind of situation? Is it? So there's two situations out there. There's the Jerry West situation, where Jerry West is brought in at Golden State, and he's there to actually advise Bob Myers and help him make decisions. And then there's the Jerry Colangelo situation like they had in Philly, where they had some questions about where Sam was going and what it was doing to the franchise. And so they basically brought in the heir apparent, but they didn't make it obvious right away.
I don't think so. I don't think it could be. I mean, maybe, but I mean, if you look at, and I guess I'm still not really sure on like his role. But you follow the announcement, and like, people were tweeting, well, he's going to be not with the team full-time. We're going to be the only team he's working with, but he's going to work out of Atlanta at times. He's a special advisor. You know, Colangelo was brought in. What, they gave him some big title right away, didn't they? I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, he was made, like, president of basketball operations or something.
Yeah.
They can always invent a title above it.
Right.
And Danny's title is actually – like, in the press release, it's special advisor. That's his title.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I find it hard to believe that they're setting up.
Yeah, hey, I think unlike the – sorry, Graham.
Go ahead. You're good.
Unlike the Philadelphia situation, I don't think that this feels inevitable in the same way. So, even – it wouldn't shock me if a year from now we were talking about Danny Ferry as the new GM of the New Orleans Pelicans. That would be unsurprising. But I also – this just doesn't seem – like the logical next step for one. And I also think there's another version of this story where, not to go down a difficult path to talk about on a podcast, but some of this could be, frankly, image repairing for Danny Ferry, that, you know, he definitely left Atlanta under some really tough and difficult professional circumstances. Del Demps seems to have a relationship with him. This could be the way that he gets back to where he could, be in the NBA again, and the exchange may be not just for a salary and a title, but there are multiple free agents coming out of Atlanta this year. Some are up for trades. Maybe there's even this connection of Danny will get us an in with some of those guys, agents or whatever. So I don't know if there's anything sort of nefarious going on with, you know, sliding Del Demps out of one door, because honestly, it's the off season. That's the other thing about the Philadelphia move. It was still during the year. So what better time would there have been if Danny wants the job than just to replace him now? Why hold on to him? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless you want to say, well, because he's under contract for a couple more years, but I think that's a little bit hard to believe.
Yeah. So let me play my counterpoint argument here.
Okay.
Because I actually am, and I don't think it's a front office, like a decision when I say front office, I don't think it's like a Mickey Loomis thing going on here. Danny Ferry is a cagey dude. Like, this is a guy who came out and held himself out of the NBA for a year because he was picked by a team he didn't want to play for. This is a guy who, when he became GM in Cleveland, was extremely careful about who was placed around him. He maneuvered people out of positions. In Atlanta, like, the whole thing about, you know, what he said and that it was racist, like, It is a fact, but if you go and read the article that was like the expose of everything that went on there, like, Danny Ferry was not, I don't know, what's the word? He was part of the problem. Like, he helped create a situation where the politics between the owners ended up revolving around him, because he had a plan and he only wanted certain kinds of interference. Like, I cannot for the life of me imagine that this is just to him saying, I want to keep in the NBA. I want to be able to, you know, repair my image. He's thinking, I'm looking around the league right now, and what is one of the best situations you can get yourself in as a general manager in the NBA, and that's taking over for a crappy team that has a legitimate top five superstar sitting on that team waiting to have a team built around him.
Mm.
he's got to look at the situation, and I know, like, he's got to say, okay, I have a relationship with him, and he's maybe not thinking I'm coming in here to slit Del's throat, but like, is anybody on this podcast going to be shocked if next season we miss the playoffs again? Shocked?
No,
shocked. Definitely not shocked.
So, okay, so he's looking at the situation. He will now be the special advisor. Clearly, he's had all kinds of nice things said about him by a bunch of people in the organization. Otherwise, he wouldn't have this job. If Del stumbles, who is in the perfect situation to just say, hey, I'm familiar with what's going on here. I've got contacts with the team. Like, I could take this over for you, no problem. Like, he's in the perfect situation for it. So, I'm 100% convinced, 100% convinced that there is some little portion, like the little guy sitting on his shoulder saying, yes, perfect. This is exactly where you want to be.
I don't think there's anything anywhere, any like being that's saying the Pelicans are the perfect situation for anyone.
No, I won't, but if you're a GM, like, so do GM positions on teams that are successful open?
No.
Never.
It's true.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would say back, though, is if you're – I mean, sure, this has happened in Philadelphia before, and, I mean, it's not like this has only happened once, but I think if we went back and looked at teams' management structures, it's pretty regular that – or it occurs pretty regularly that a guy, either a coach or – manager who loses a job gets these types of special advisory roles, and it's probably because they're pretty cush positions. They're probably making like six figures and working from home, as you know, Graham just described. So I don't think that Danny's a dumb guy. I'm sure he sees that there is a possibility for him to get back into a general manager seat relatively quickly and with not a lot of finagling. But I guess on top of everything I said before, there's also, we just don't see this every time a guy gets a special advisory role, and it happens every year. So just based off of prior data, I'm kind of hesitant to say that he's making a move here, because I don't think this is any, by any means, a fast track into a position, because he could just as easily be, you know, thrown out with Dell if he goes out this offseason and makes a couple of moves that sort of have his stamp of approval with the team, and, you know, things still go poorly, then it's also on Danny. Do you know what I mean?
I think he's,
I don't see him lining up the chessboard. But I guess that all depends on how involved he really is.
Right. Okay. So let me stick you guys on the spot. This time next year, what percentage chance will you, and like, I'm doing this because McNamara used to do it all to me all the time, and it would drive me nuts. So I'm gonna do it to you guys, and we're gonna start with you, Nick. What is the percentage chance that next year at this time we'll be talking about the decisions that Danny Ferry, GM of the New Orleans Pelicans, are going to be making at the draft?
I'd say 1 out of 5, 20%.
Okay.
Ooh. Pardon. 11%.
Okay. I am going to say 60%. I believe it's more likely than not that he will be the GM next year.
Wow.
Okay.
Hot takes.
Yeah. Okay. So anyways, again, like, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And we haven't even said this. There's the natural leap. You guys are happy to hear that he's involved in the decision-making. So if Danny Ferry was the Pelicans GM next year at this point, like I just suggested he would be, you guys would be happy with that, right?
Yeah, I'd be fine with it. I mean, I think I've gone on record before of saying that I think GMing takes a lot of luck, but I think he's proven himself confident. I'd be fine with it. I don't know.
Yeah. So, Graham, what would be your, like, what is the, if you had to pick one thing from what you've seen of his career, what is the one thing that would make you feel the best about him being the GM?
feel the best about him. I mean, just everything. I mean, he has got his, you know, Basketball Reference has like his page where you can look at all his moves and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And just like everything that he did with the Hawks just seemed to like work out.
Like, he also paid Larry Hughes.
He did. But you look at like Cleveland, you know, he was there for five years, 2005, 2010. Mm-hmm. And that whole time, you know, that whole team was criticized because they couldn't get the right stuff around their one star who ended up leaving, you know, and that, mm-hmm. that sounds a lot like what could happen, you know, to us here where
yep. they also routinely won like 50 to 60 games though.
Yeah. Well, LeBron, you know, it's nice having that, but I don't know. I don't know. I mean, now, assuming this happens, right? Assuming he does, like, he's the one put in charge, that means that Dell kind of, you know, screwed the pooch or something, you know. So you'd be happy to have a competent guy just immediately there to step in. So I guess, I'd be happy that we had someone as respected as he is, you know, who did build, like, a – they were 60-win team. Atlanta won 60 games last year, right?
Yeah, 16-22.
Yep. Yeah, so you got a guy who, yeah, he built that team, so he's got okay. a good track record. So yeah.
Yeah. So I have one number one reason why I really like something that Danny Ferry did in Atlanta. So everybody always talks about him finding Damari Carroll.
But really, it's Kent Bazemore. I agree. We can move on.
No. I wasn't going Bazemore. I guess I could have. Yeah.
He doesn't base less, Ryan. Let's go on.
No, it's Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
Like, that is easily his best signing, period.
Oh, wait, is that not what you said? Well, who did you say instead of Paul Millsap?
Damari Carroll.
Oh.
So people like are excited.
Really?
He unearthed, like they're like, oh well, he unearthed Damari Carroll and he paid him like $3 million a year for 2 years and he turned into amazing Damari Carroll. And they talk about Kent Bazemore the same way, like he's going to unearth these guys and pay them a pittance and they're going to come in and they're going to be very, very good. And that's exciting. I'm not going to say that's bad, but he was the one who actually signed a legitimate top 15 NBA player to like an $8 million a year contract at one point. Like this, he is really good at signing guys who can make significant impacts that everybody else kind of looks away. I mean, it's just, so
he got Kyle Korver for nothing.
Yeah, he did get Kyle Korver for nothing.
Literally nothing.
Like, so yeah. Cash to the Chicago Bulls for Kyle Korver.
Yeah.
A lot of that feels like that's because people don't realize how good Paul Millsap is, though. But, yeah, I agree with your point, yeah.
Although you did miss the most important trade he made in 2012, which was he traded Willie Green away to the Los Angeles Clippers.
Why would anybody trade Willie? Perfect. He's the perfect professional athlete.
He is. And the best part is they traded him for Sophocles Shortsanitis. Is that how you say his name?
No idea.
Who... I don't know if anybody remembers, at one point he was like a hot draft prospect. He was called Baby Shaq.
Oh, I do remember that now, actually.
That is Sophocles.
There's no way anybody compared to a Baby Shaq would turn out well. There's no
way. That's right. Right. Yeah. So anyways, okay. So anything else you guys want to say about Danny Ferry, or should we jump away from the Danny Ferry conspiracy talk and move on?
I'm fine moving on.
Yeah, I'm okay.
All right, so next, we get to actually talk about the draft ourselves. We had the last podcast, we talked about the draft, but it's still fun to talk about the draft, so we're now a little closer. I've absorbed a lot more information about some of these players. I feel like I've watched a bunch of tape on some of them. I'll be honest, I have spent hours looking at guys who could be ours with the sixth pick. I have spent maybe a minute looking at guys who could be ours with the two picks later in the draft. So we'll get to that a little bit later. I'm not going to be able to help that much there. But what I want to do is first we'll start with you, Nick. Give me your three guys that you would like to be are the top of your board. And, of course, we can't have Brandon Ingram. We can't have Ben Simmons. There's no way we're getting either of those guys. After that, the draft could go a lot of different ways.
Okay.
So who are your top three guys after that? Because picking six, it's actually four, but I'll just make you take the top three so that we can all feel real sad when we don't get any of them.
Yeah, I actually wrote a post that I think went up today about this, where I kind of pointed out that it'd be the Pelicans would be in a really good spot if someone like Chris jumped up, because that means one of these guys that's in the agreed upon second tier is guaranteed to us. Whereas right now, we might be on the outside looking in at all of our choices. But my list for top three is not going to be enjoyed here. But I would go Jamal Murray number one. That'd be number one on my guys. Okay. Chris Dunn at number two. And then number three, I would go Dragan Bender.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're supporting the Dragan.
I am. Yeah.
Okay.
Any
All
particular
right, so...
reason?
For Dragan Bender?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, well, so some of it's just I'm not as high on other guys that, you know, feasibly could be there, for one. Two, I think he's sliding for slightly artificial reasons, but the most important is just I think the draft is always a probability gamble, and once you get to the sixth pick, you're not – this is cheesy, but nothing's guaranteed. So you're just dealing with low probabilities that these guys will even be really a starter. So I almost enjoy the idea of swinging for the fences and just saying let's bring in a guy who – just physically looks the role and do something that's frankly weird and have two of these 7-foot shot blockers running around and see if it works, because that's the type of stuff you have to get lucky on. I mean, I know it's bizarre to think now, but there was a point where people were saying, oh, well, Golden State doesn't get in the lane enough. They've got too many shooters in their backcourt. I mean, so I think sometimes it's worth just trying something when you've got the opportunity. And it just, the idea of him working out excites me more than other guys that are on y'all's list.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
All right. So fire away, Graham.
I don't have like a set 1, 2, 3. I keep, okay. I'm flip flopping all over the place. But the more I look at it, the more I like down I get on Buddy.
Yes.
Yeah. I keep looking at it. And it's like him and Murray are like the two kind of scory guards. And then you look at it and they kind of have the same strengths in the shooting, the same weaknesses. And you don't know who they can guard or the burst or the athleticism or whatever it is. And then one of them's 19 and one of them's 22, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Murray, he's in there. Dunn, I'm getting higher on Dunn. And then – honestly, after those two, I'd kind of like us to see, like, you know, either trade back or trade it. Honestly, I'm okay with trading it. No one wanted to trade it. I wrote the little the matchup. It was Valentine versus trade the pick for the sixth pick term. It got destroyed.
Oh, I gotta tell you. So I set the seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I tried so hard to come up with something that would give trade for a vet a chance. So I was like, okay, I want Denzel Valentine to be in this because I like Denzel Valentine. Like, what's the best chance? Like, I will put Valentine, who's like on most draft boards is no higher than 14.
Yeah.
And so the premise is we're going to reach that far from the sixth pick to grab Denzel Valentine or trade it for a vet. And you got destroyed.
You'd have to change vet. Can't put the word vet in there. That just turns
That's
people
true.
Off as soon as it's, you got to put like trade for a pretty good established player. There's something a little bit catchier than that.
A young veteran.
Yeah,
sure.
A young.
I don't think that would actually help.
I don't know. There's not. There's no way. No one wants to trade it. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Matter.
All right.
But
so,
I'd be okay.
Okay. My top three, and It's actually changed a little bit since the last time we've had the podcast. I have Chris Dunn first now, and then I have Buddy, and then I have Murray.
Okay.
Which I think is kind of a flop of what I had before. Murray, right. Although his offensive skills are so high, like for a kid that young, I watched him play defense. I watched him fail to score around the rim very well. Like most of his scoring was off catch and shoots. And I know he can turn that, he can develop that, but I'm just not excited about it anymore. And then I watch Buddy, and yes, I know there's like a 3-year difference between these two guys I'm talking about, but then I also look at what Buddy did every year, and I have a very clear track record in front of me that Buddy will work like a dog to get better.
Well, so you've grown more on Buddy as time's gone
yes.
on.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting.
Yeah. So
I loved him.
I mean,
and
but
then...
yeah. Because I actually, yeah. The more I looked at Buddy, I actually had the exact opposite reaction, and it was actually because of what you just said. There's a track record of things he never really picked up. What's the role for a Buddy Hield sized player in the NBA at his position who doesn't pass and turns the ball over?
Rip Hamilton.
No. That you can't say that with full confidence, like that's true.
No, I am 100% like so. The reason why I say that,
like 6'7", like he could get around a screen in the NBA. I don't. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Rick was 6'7".
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
He
was skinny as could yeah. be. He was like he was one of those slender guys who could vanish between picks that were being set for him. Mm-hmm. I just think that what I watched last year and even more the year before was numerous sets where Eric Gordon was supposed to like burst off of double down screens, run up to a flare wing, and just he would work. And he didn't work at all if he wasn't getting the ball. You could watch two different plays, the first 4 seconds of that play, and know immediately was Eric Gordon getting the ball or was he like the third option in this play? No, immediately. And I'm 100% convinced that Buddy's motor is not going to let him do that. He will be an annoying distraction you have to keep track of all the time. And if you don't, he is going to drill a three in your face. And Hamilton was the same sort of thing, except he didn't go for threes so much. He worked kind of more around inside the corners of the paint. Mm-hmm. But it's the same sort of thing. Like, I just want a guy on my team who is not going to be, all right, Drew or Tyreek has the ball, I'm going to stand in the corner and wait. Like, a guy who will willingly cut, a guy who will willingly move off the ball, who will willingly leave everything he can out there. And I really, I want to see that again. I'm tired of what we have. I like the ball.
As you said Eric Gordon was supposed to burst, I stopped listening.
I made the joke that I compare Buddy to Eric, but I understand your point. The only last thing I'll say is I think it might be a little bit harder to be everyone's All-American if you were on the Pelicans last year. Not to excuse Eric, but just to say 82 games is a lot of games. So
yeah.
It kind of took a Herculean effort each game for Buddy to have the year they did, and it was obviously a lot of fun as somebody who watches college basketball, but I mean, some of that I just don't think can translate to the NBA, that a guy can be that type of force each night. But again, I'm a big believer in the draft is just a big, dumb gamble. So, yeah, he might be great, and it kind of wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I feel like motor is a skill.
Yeah, sure.
And I think he's got a pretty good one. And I can't say whether Jamal Murray has a bad motor. It just... I want to have a guy to root for and to really enjoy. I kind of like Buddy now. Now the surprise, actually, people listen to the last podcast, like Chris Dunn rising to the top, should surprise them because I was pretty down on Chris. Like, Dunn was the least, my least favorite of all of the prospects people talked about. Like, when I first started, like, looking at this, I had Bender higher than him. I had Valentine higher than Dunn. Like, I did not want Chris Dunn. And now Chris Dunn is really high on my list. You guys had him pretty high on your list, too. Why do you guys like Chris so much?
Graham, you want to go first? I've been talking too much.
Sure. Well, the passing, for one thing, you know.
Yeah.
Two, what would you say the Pels, like, what do they suck at the most?
Defense.
There you go. You know, yeah. who's Murray going to guard? Who's Buddy going to guard? Can they switch? You know, not really. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, that's it for me. He's a good, he measures out pretty well. He's a good defensive prospect. Buddy's got a more polished offensive game, though, even though they're around the same age. I think they're both 22.
Mm-hmm.
Dunn's a junior. But he's capable, and he's a little bit more versatile. And even though they're around the same age, you just get this feeling that he can be a little bit more polished. He can develop a little bit more. Whereas, kind of like what you guys were talking about a minute ago, you're not sure a lot of the things Buddy did this year will translate. Yeah, but the defense is the main thing, though. You know, he can come in and immediately make an impact, I think, you know?
Yeah. So, Nick, are you in agreement? Is it just the defense that makes you hot and bothered?
Well, kind of. I think it's the defense, but I think it's also just IQ. If you watch Dunn play, he does so many things for that Providence team. Almost to the point it was bizarre to watch. Like, they would run sets where he would get into the low post at 6'3", regardless of matchup. It's because he's a really smart, crafty player. So I don't know if his game translates. I'm actually kind of worried that he's going to just be a weird fit, and it's going to be one of those guys who might have to bounce around a little bit until he finds that perfect team. But frankly, I would just be excited about having a guy on the Pelicans that I thought was a pretty bright basketball player. Yeah. So that's really all it is for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I that's where I settle too. Like, Chris Dunn, he has the highest steal rate of any player who could be drafted this year, who's, like, in the top 100 to be drafted this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is – he plays hard-nosed defense. You watch his defense out there. He's smart. He fights through picks. And again, like, I keep falling into the same trap, which I know a lot of other people are, and they just look at the offensive stats and how well these players play on offense, and you get into it and you enjoy watching them play, and you're like, and that guy's a great shooter, and wow, he's going to be amazing next to this guy and next to that guy, and you want to just look at the offensive end. But last year, when the Pelicans were healthy with the very short time, and even when they were mostly healthy, they were a top 10 offense. A top 10 offense. Like, they were actually pretty good offensively.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you get when you have Anthony Davis on your floor with anybody that's moderately competent. So just give me some defensive players. If we can be even the 10th ranked offense, if you can improve the defense to, say, 15th, suddenly this team is a almost guaranteed playoff team. So start grabbing defensive players.
And I think him with Drew Holiday is super interesting. I think the reason I've kind of grown on him is I've had the feeling he's a special type of player that requires a particular fit, and I've grown more convinced that Drew Holiday might be the perfect running mate for him. I just think those two together would make sense for some reason. And the idea of having those two people at the point of attack playing really aggressive defense might make the Pelicans' defense watchable. If not next year, in a couple of years. So that's enough for me.
The other team likes to watch it. In fact, most of the other Pelicans players like to watch as the other guys play defense, and they don't.
Yeah, that's sure.
Lots of people watch.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on. We've got our top three out there. I don't think any of them are particularly surprising. Like, even Bender. Like, if my three guys are off the board and Bender's sitting there, I'm not going to be upset. If he's taken, I'm not going to be like, oh no, that sky's falling. I'm going to be like scared out of my mind. I'm not going to be upset.
Okay.
So let us let me ask you that question. Nick, you're going to go first on this one. You're watching the draft, and something happens involving the Pelicans. It can't be another team. Well, the other team can be involved, but it has to also involve the Pelicans. Something happens, and you now want to turn the draft off in disgust. What is that event that makes you want to do that?
I mean, so there's the easy answer would be they reach on a couple of players, but I don't think that's really feasible. I think the one thing that I could see happening that would frustrate me would be some sort of move where we trade back in the draft very far with the intent of dumping somebody's salary. So like tying the sixth pick to somebody and then like trading for a pick next year or something like that with the intent.
Like a Sheik?
I'm thinking a Sheik. And the intent being let's clear up some cap immediately and go after a free agent. And the reason I'd be disgusted is I think that you're just kind of I don't know if the payoff will be there, but you're setting up the storyline already if that's what we're going to do. And so it just to me would be we're so clearly going to get a guy and overpay him. And so there would have to be a couple of domino pieces to fall before I got disgusted, I guess. But that would be the thing that concerns me. I mean, trading for a veteran, I'd be fine with trading to the middle of the draft. But if it's a salary dump situation, I'd rather take a flyer on someone like Bender or even Jaylen Brown than that, honestly.
Okay. Graham, what you got?
That one crossed my mind. I will say that. Just setting up to, you know, everybody sees it coming. Well, we're just going to overpay to get, you know, not really a top talent. But the one thing that I really was scared about is you keep seeing these reports that Brooklyn is going to get a pick. Brooklyn's going to find a way to make a trade for a pick in the top 10. And I just don't do it. They don't have anything to give us. You know, they could put something together. Like Thaddeus Young's a good player. Sure. He's made a living of playing off ball as a big, you know, not having plays called for him consistently, averaging 15 points a game his whole career, whatever. They got, like, outside of that, they got, like, Shane Larkin. And
they got Brook Lopez?
They're not going to give up Brook.
Okay. Shane Larkin is a great pick-and-roll point guard.
Great 5'11 pick-and-roll.
Yeah. Not on defense, only on offense. If you run that one play, he is easily above average.
There you go. Like trade the sixth pick for something like Thaddeus Young, Shane Larkin in like a 2 seconds or something stupid. I don't even know. I can't even put something together like a package that would even make sense.
I think they would trade Brook Lopez first of all. So would you be okay with a Brook Lopez for the sixth pick?
He's got a couple years left right on contract.
He's got two.
He's at two now.
Don't do it. Just don't do it. Stay away from Brooklyn. Just stay away from Brooklyn. Like, they're going to be – I just don't want us to be that team that gives them a pick, you know, because they have nothing to give us.
It wouldn't make me upset if we got Brook, but anything else, yeah, absolutely, that would upset
me. It's hard to be upset getting Brook. He's an all-star, you know. You bring an all-star in, how can you really be upset? But I just, you know, I don't know. That was the one thing that, like, I was seeing all these things the other day, just – oh, Brooklyn's really going to find a way to get in the pick, you know, and I'm just like, oh, God, not us.
Yeah. What about Thad Young and Hollis Jefferson?
Ooh.
No.
Okay. I just feel like you're being petulant, but all right.
I don't know why. There's something about it. I just feel like no matter what package they were able to put together, you know, Hollis Jefferson, Thaddeus Young, and maybe that – Bogdanovich or something, you know, who's like an average backup shooting guard or something. I don't know. It's just
like take the young guy.
Really appeal to you like that much? Would you do that? Would you trade the sixth pick for anything Brooklyn could give you?
Who are you asking?
Not including Brook.
If they included Hollis Jefferson, I'd have to consider, yeah, because Hollis Jefferson is a pretty solid prospect, and we need defenders on the wing. Like that's my whole thing, and that's what he can do. Yeah. I mean, I don't know enough about Hollis Jefferson and how he did it when he came back from his injury to be 100% confident. I'd have to, like, of course, go look at him more. But I definitely consider that, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I guess I am just being a...
Well, he's also picked 23rd overall, so he has, like, a tiny contract. I think that's the other thing that's intriguing about Hollis Jefferson is you could potentially get a starter that's making less than 1.5 for the next 4 years, so...
Yeah.
That is true.
So my number one thing that would make me turn off the draft in disgust, Jaylen Brown.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's that simple for me. Like, and I actually sat and I was thinking about it today, and I'm wondering, I was just like, am I being stupid about this? Because if you just think in a vacuum, what is the difference between what we know about Jaylen Brown and what we know about Dragan Bender? Like, the reason why they're high on lists is because the experts tell us these guys have high ceilings. If not because of what they did last year in either of their professional or college careers. Like, what Dragan Bender did in Israel was not play. So all we have there is a complete lack of information about how good he is. And what we have for Jaylen Brown is he played for a team that didn't have a whole lot of space around him, and he didn't play that great. So, but which is worse, like a guy who can't get off the bench or a guy who played a lot but wasn't all he was supposed to be? But for me, Jaylen Brown is just terrifying. Like, I look at what he did last year and he checks none of the boxes I want for a guy to join this Pelicans team. He wasn't a very good defender. He was not a good ball handler or passer. He wasn't an efficient scorer, and he's got none of the marks of a shooter. Like, so you're hoping he turns into a slasher who develops a jump shot at some point and learns how to play defense. Well, pretty much.
That's like, a lot to learn.
It's a lot to learn. Like, maybe in 3 years he'll turn into something. And maybe his ceiling is super high because he is the 6'7" prototype of what you want a wing player to be.
Yeah. But he also is, like, known to be a high character guy, which I think is why I'm higher on him, is I've just read a couple of his long form interviews and I'm like, wow, it's a well-spoken 18-year-old. Whereas then there's, like, just comparing him to, I don't know, D'Angelo Russell, for example. Yeah, like,
oh, come on. That's just not even fair.
I cherry-picked that horribly, but who we all were at 18. Like, if there was a guy who just based off personality alone, I could see keeping a level head and working really hard. I think he falls in that category. And I mean, also, it's kind of like we have a horrible selection bias because he went to a college that just, I mean, it's the same thing with Ben Simmons. Like, I'm honestly not sure, despite what everyone on Twitter tells me, if Ben Simmons really can't shoot. I think LSU had really bad spacing and a dumb offense. So, you know what I mean? Like, we think because we see 30 games of these kids, we get a great idea of who they are as players, but there's so many variables that go into it. I mean, let me put it this way. If Jaylen Brown, if 15 years from now, we're having a podcast on whatever format and we were trying to compare Jaylen Brown to people and we were like, yeah, he was Josh Howard. Would that shock you?
No.
Okay. So Josh Howard, who was, a slightly below average 3-point shooter. I think he was around like 33% and a solid defender. Would you be okay with that at the sixth pick?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I'm just saying, I don't think it's really, would get me disgusted by him. I think it'd be a little bit frightening, but I wouldn't get worked up for those reasons.
Yeah, I would be disgusted.
Okay.
he's just the one dude who screams bust to me. And again, if you actually go back and look at some of my previous draft analysis, I have named some busts like Andre Drummond who are anything but. So take it with a grain of salt, but he is the one who just screams to me like, I just can't see this guy developing. Paul George is another one. I thought Paul George was going to be garbage in the NBA.
Oh, man, you're whipping out some big ones.
Good on you for owning those two.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
So I'm so good at this analysis whiffed on all NBA players. Both of those guys are all NBA. They're not just all-stars. They're all NBA players, and I whiffed on them.
I thought Thomas Robinson would be an all-star.
Oh, yeah, I was high on him, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought he'd be pretty good.
I thought he'd be, like, a better David West.
Yeah.
Well, maybe David West now.
Yeah, David West at like 38.
All right. So, anything else you want to talk about? Like, is there any other a scenario you guys could think of that would like make you? The other one I had, which is my second choice, I would be really annoyed with a Drew Holiday style trade.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of would too, and I feel like that's a little bit illogical, but yeah, I would be kind of upset with just borderline all-star player.
Yeah.
Yeah, trading for a borderline all-star player and future assets going out the door. I'm not a fan of that right now. I keep the assets and just keep building.
I'm honestly better with my hypothetical Jefferson and Thad Young trade, because at least then you're getting a little bit of depth, arguably, but yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so next. I had a couple questions about this on Twitter, so I wanted to bring it up. Would you guys be willing to trade, and this is, again, betting on yourself, so in some respects people might like to do this. Denzel Valentine is sitting there at pick number 15 still. And you can trade next year's first round pick for him. Do you have any interest in doing that at all? Or any player? Doesn't even have to be Denzel Valentine. Maybe you guys are hot and bothered over somebody else. Like, I know you like the Villanova guard. So there's a guy sitting there at 15 or 16, somewhere right around there. And there's an offer on the table. You give him next year's pick, and it's even top five protected.
A little bit. Little interest.
Little interest. Okay.
I'm not that interested, but go ahead, Graham.
No, I don't even know. I don't even know.
you flip flop quickly on that one.
I do. No, I mean, like, I'd have a little bit of interest. I'm gonna stay with a little bit of interest, but
Valentine was at 19-7-7 last year.
Okay.
That means nothing to me.
Okay.
I don't know. It's like, I wouldn't be upset if they did that. Like, I'd be like, but then I would be, I mean, then you get another young player to root for. So it's like, once the season starts, you're hoping, I don't know.
You can talk yourself into it.
I could easily talk myself into this.
So it's one of those things where like, if it happened, you'd be kind of like, oh, but then you'd talk yourself into it by the time season
honestly,
starts.
Honestly, there's not a lot that would that could happen in this draft that would, like, disgust me. There's not.
Okay.
You say that.
You say that, but then Brooklyn comes knocking.
Yeah. The Hollis Jefferson offer. No, I don't know. I
think it's Shane Larkin, the part that's really bothering him.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking that. I was like, all right, who's trying to trade for a pick? You know, what would I not want to see us do? And I started looking at Brooklyn's roster, and I'm just like, and they don't even have anything to, like, outside of, they don't have picks to give us or anything, so it's like.
Honestly, you know. I would think about Shane Larkin and Thad Young. I'd think about it.
I mean, okay. Yeah, I looked at some YouTube videos. I read some articles. There was some positive stuff written about Shane Larkin, I'll tell you that. He had a career year with 7-something points and four assists.
I mean, this podcast is good fun, but we started Tony Douglas for a number of games last year, and Tony's a great guy, but like, I don't want to make fun of anyone's...
I enjoyed watching Tony Douglas play last year.
So, okay, so did I, but... I mean...
Tony's an interesting guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and you saw his kid?
Yeah.
I mean, it was big moments last year. Like, these are the moments we can cling to.
Pick any of the other 8 D-League players we played last year and replace them in that comment.
All right, so let's move on, because I don't think anybody wants to hear about Shane Larkin anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, side note for guards that played for us last year, Nate Robinson's trying out for the Seahawks.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
So what are your odds that Nate Robinson is on a Seattle Seahawks roster come the beginning of the NFL season?
Come the beginning? Like of the regular season?
Yes.
0.5%.
Okay. Wow, you're higher than me. I was going 0.45%.
Well,
It's like the Price is Right. I undercut you just a little bit there. I'm going to bet $1. All right, so nobody probably watches The Price is Right anymore. They're probably wondering what the hell I'm talking about.
No, well, Drew Carey's on there still, right? People don't like him too much.
You actually know more about it than I do. The last time I saw it, I think he was, and I think they still had the models that were showing the products off, that the same models they had in like the 1980s.
Oh, geez.
And they all had like plastic faces at this point.
I saw something. It was, I don't know what I was doing, but I was just goofing around on the internet, and there's a video of a, it's horrible. It's Drew Carey. It's on a, you know, they got this girl in a wheelchair, and she wins. I don't know how the show works, to be honest, but she gets like a choice between two curtains or something. And the one she picks, they had a treadmill. Oh, it was horrible. Oh, God. This was like yesterday. I saw this yesterday. But Price is Right YouTube video.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Anyway, that was my... There we go. Yeah, that was my contribution for the night.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to what I mentioned before. I have spent very little time looking at the second-round prospects. In fact, the most time I spent was today. The Pelicans had a list of, I think it was like 13 guys who came in, tried out. They were all second-round prospects. So I went and looked up each of those guys, the ones I weren't familiar with, and just looked at them, eyeballed them. In the last podcast, we talked about a couple of them, like Gary Payton is on the list. So the second round pick, I cannot drum up any excitement over either of these second round picks. So please, one of the two of you or both of you, come up with some reason why I should care about the second round picks that this team's going to make come draft night.
Nate, please go. Please take
this. I mean, if you're like a fan of Israeli basketball, you might see one of those picks playing there. So there's this false idea out there that second round draft picks are like lottery tickets, meaning that, you know, they're not worth a lot, but there's always this chance you'll hit it big. But the thing that people don't realize is teams actually don't often play those lottery tickets. If you go back and look at a lot of second rounds, there's a lot of guys people never really anticipate to come over unless they make a one in a million jump in terms of their career. And it's right. Because they want to finagle the salary cap and their contracts in such a way that they don't have salaries on the books for players who just aren't NBA quality. So, yeah, we can all get excited about the idea of a possible Draymond Green, but the reality is it probably is going to be like the backup shooting guard for some Israeli basketball team. And now, granted, we have relatively high second round picks, so it's a little bit unlikely that the Pelicans would try to do that. But even still, you know, someone like Gary Payton II isn't all that enticing to me. But I don't know. I don't have any reason for you to care about the second round picks. I probably won't remember them after they happen.
That's right. It's like me and the second round pick we had, Adam Haluska. I couldn't even remember his name when I wrote the value of the draft pick.
Do you remember a few years ago, who was the big man from Florida?
Pat Young.
What's his name?
Yeah, Patrick Young. Patrick Young.
Remember how much like everyone loved him in training camp, and I was convinced he could at least bounce around NBA rosters.
They were furious. Like, people were furious.
Oh, yeah, I guess he was undrafted. Sorry, so yeah. The second rounder. But yeah, he like never made it with any NBA team.
No. And people were just absolutely furious when he was cut. So, yeah, I mean, like, I like the idea of some of these guys. Like, there are things you can look at some of these players and be like, well, that could turn into something. Like, Gary Payton... He posted a really high PER last year for his college team, and for a guard, the guy had grabbed like almost 9 rebounds a game, or almost 8 rebounds a game. Like, the guy has some interesting attributes, but then you find out when you like take a look at some of the video on him, he can't really dribble that well. Mm. He's a guard.
Yeah, it's like, kind of essential for his job.
Right. So. I mean, he never played guard until his senior year when they had to make him a guard, and then he played guard and he wasn't very good as a penetrator. So that's a major problem. And then the guy today, and I'm going to say the name because
I know the name you're about to say. Everyone get the popcorn ready.
And I actually think I can nail it here. It's Gershon Yabusele. I'm pretty close, I think, on that. Somebody correct me if I'm incorrect, but the idea of him's great. Like apparently in the workouts today, he nailed a whole bunch of three pointers, and he's a big power, strong power forward, a power forward that can knock down threes. Hey, he's Ryan Anderson's replacement, right? And then you go and you take like 30 seconds to read what he did in his career so far. He played in the French league for a team that was so bad they got relegated this year.
Yeah, in the B league, yeah.
And he was their best player.
He's also 6'8", 260.
Yeah. And he averaged 8 points and 4 rebounds. Like, this isn't like not the idea. Again,
and 4 rebounds.
Right. And he like played like 30 minutes a game for like half the season.
Okay, so since we're on this list, I'm gonna name a couple of other names on this pre-draft workout list.
Do it.
I know you like your prospects. So go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So we talked about Gary Payton II. Everyone's mm-hmm. lukewarm on that. What about Yogi Ferrell?
So he's a point guard out of Indiana, right?
Yeah, 6 foot, 180, Indiana. Picnic baskets, etc.
I had kind of gotten the feeling from looking at his numbers that he's just nothing special. Like, that's the one thing I kept going to is, like if these guys are average in college, or even slightly above average in college, how are they going to be anything in the NBA?
Especially someone like Ferrell, who's 23, and it doesn't seem like his game would translate any better to the NBA than it did in college.
I mean, like, if you're telling me that you're a point guard on a team in college and you average, say, and I don't even remember what Yogi's stats were, but if you're putting up like a 12-5 or a 12-4 or something around those lines, like, even if you're the most efficient guard on the planet at those numbers, I'm not excited. I don't think you're going to turn into anything. Like, we have guys who come, like, who's the guy at Kendall Marshall? That guy put up insane numbers as a point guard, and he couldn't make it in the NBA. So you're going to come into the NBA with your ordinary stats and turn into something?
Yeah, and that's just some of that's just the depth of the guard position in the NBA right now. I mean,
right?
Okay, so what about Perry Ellis, Graham? Any love for old man Ellis?
Old man, how old is he? What's his?
He looks like he's 100, but I think he's only 23.
I think his beard is going partly white already.
Wow.
Is that a real?
No.
Okay. But that's how believable it was.
I have to look for a picture.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Four-year senior at Kansas, right?
Yeah, 4-year senior. It's like a 6'8", power forward. Man. That's just all of these guys on this list is if you tried really hard, you could talk yourself into them. But at the end of the day,
It's like the summer league, you know. You see these guys like Seth Curry. Remember Seth Curry, who actually, for Sacramento, had a good year. But I don't know. I can't get excited about any of these names. I just.
Okay. So what we're telling everybody listening to this podcast is don't give a damn about either of these picks. Depressed when we'll talk about them.
Do you care about them at all? Like, will you watch those selections happen?
So technically I'll actually be traveling the draft happens, which really, it is actually something that once I realized when our trip was, I cursed because the draft is actually one of my favorite things to watch all year round. It's like one of the very few things I have that I actually start watching when it actually starts and enjoy the hell out of it. I'll be interested to see who they pick, and I'm sure I'll have lots of things to talk about, and I'll enjoy, watching them in summer league and getting all excited about how awesome they are, and maybe they'll fit into this team. And then like 2 years from now, they'll be, in my value of the draft pick post where I say, remember these guys who never played more than a couple of minutes as NBA players? Well, this is what you can get at pick number 42.
Yep.
That's just, so, but hey, maybe we'll get Manu Ginobili. The next Manu Ginobili.
Nobody coming back this year?
I don't know. No, they haven't decided yet. He and Tim Duncan have not announced anything. He had a decent season.
He did.
So, that's pretty much all I had to talk about. Danny Ferry and the draft. We're going to have the draft coming up here on the 23rd, so it's coming up pretty quickly.
We've talked about what we want. Do we want to end this podcast with predictions of what will actually happen with the sixth pick? Do you want to do that?
Sure.
I don't have one. You guys go first.
All right.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
I'm going to say we trade it. Whether I don't know if we're going to trade it down or for what, but I have a feeling that we're going to, like Nick talked about a little bit earlier, there's a chance that we're just on the outside looking in at some of these guys that we're high on, and I think we fall into something like that, and I think we already kind of have something in the works. I don't know. That's my feeling. That's my feeling on it.
Okay. My prediction is Chris or Bender is going to move up in the draft above us. One of those three guards will be available for us, and we'll take them. And that guard will be Buddy.
I think we're going to end up with whichever old guard is still around. And I won't be too excited about it, but I think it'll be all right. So I think
Buddy or Dunn?
Yeah, man, I actually could see this team going Denzel, honestly. If an old guard isn't left, if Dunn and Hield are off the board, I could see them doing it.
At six?
Yeah, because I don't think there's actually a trade out there for them to move back. I don't think there's going to be a veteran trade for them. I think people are going to try to clutch to their solid players on contracts from a couple years ago. So I think the team is going to convince themselves that they can't move anywhere and their guy's not there. Well, let's get us a person who can make an immediate impact, even though I don't really think that's true if you look at the history of the NBA. But I think that's the direction we're going to go. If all of those things happen. And I just have a feeling, given the luck of this team recently, that's how it's going to happen.
Yeah,
and I'm just not buying a Chris or Bender jump, really. I think that some of that's just white noise. So I think it'll be standard Pat, and we'll end up with Dunn, Hield, or Valentine.
Okay. I guess that's it. That's our prediction. I do want to know there is breaking news about something in the NBA. This is going to shock both of you. Rajon Rondo says there was just too much tension in the Kings locker room this year, and that's why the team never gelled.
No way. I don't believe it.
Breaking news. No one could have figured that out.
It's not like he's going to blame his jump shot either.
Right. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know, and we'll have lots more draft coverage when the draft actually occurs.